Hey Brian, hey Rick, Shooter McGavin here on a Masters weekend, day two. Wow. So I heard your From the Tips podcast is kind of badass.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of From the Tips. It is me, your boy Brian, always joined by my fantastic co-host Rick Landis. How we doing, good buddy?
Finally cooling off. We were just talking about it. It was a very humid day.
Ooh, very so humid.
I was sweating just standing there, which kind of sucks.
Eventually, is it less sweat and more just like air water?
No.
No,
just continual sweat. It just doesn't stop. It's like you stand there and you sweat and then you start doing stuff and then you sweat.
Yeah. And then after you start sweating, even when you're not doing anything.
Perpetually sweating.
You're sweating. Yeah.
My one coworker's a nut job. He was wearing a crew neck till like 1 p.m. today.
I was like, is he cutting? What's happening?
I was like, are you like, a psychopath? He was like, I just don't feel like taking it off. And then he took it off and his shirt underneath was like,
soaked.
Like where his pant line was, like it was a visible difference in color between top part of his shirt and the bottom part of his shirt. It's not just the sweatshirt off.
I couldn't imagine, like I've been lazy before, don't get me wrong, but I could not even fathom how lazy someone would need to be to not take a crew neck off in today's weather. It never really like reached super, super hot. Like the highest temp it got, I believe, was like the mid 80s, but it was just the humidity.
Yeah.
Was nuts.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it's one of those situations where if you don't get rain, it's just worse as the day goes on.
Yeah.
It just gets worse. Luckily we got some rain, but where Rick was, it did not rain. So that kind of sucks. Fine for me because I work indoors, but you know, that's just because I work a lazy person's job. All righty, Rick, what do we have for sports history today?
Not too much, to be honest. 1970, Frank Robinson. It's two grand slams as the Baltimore Orioles beat the Washington Senators 12-2.
How about it? Two grand slams.
That's pretty impressive, if you ask me.
Yeah, I'm going to hit in one game. I think that sounds like it's got to be a record.
Oh, here we go. This is a good one. Actually, there's two good ones back-to-back here. 1996. You know who the first pick of the NBA draft was in 1996?
Who? Is it a Sixer?
It was.
Is it Allen Iverson?
It is.
Hey, the answer.
2003. Do you know who the first pick of the NBA draft was?
In 2003?
Yeah.
God, no. I don't. Give me a team. I'll see if I can.
Which one?
The first pick in 2003.
Who they were drafted by?
Yeah.
The Cleveland Cavaliers.
Is it LeBron?
Yeah.
Today? Both of those things happened today?
Separate years, but yeah.
Oh, my God. When's the NBA draft this year? Is that happening tonight?
That already happened.
Oh, right. Yeah, that did already happen. The NHL draft's in 2 days. Speaking
of NHL, do you know who the number one pick in 2015 was? It's draft season, baby. That's where we're at. Right,
that was Connor McDavid. That was Connor
McDavid. That was Connor McDavid.
That's McJesus right there.
By the Edmonton Oilers.
Still ringless, even though they have two of the best players of their generation. And goaltending wins championships, baby. Don't want to tell you. In that too, team sport. You know what isn't a team sport though? Right. Sometimes now. Golf. We'll get into it actually. I realized that segue, considering what we were going to talk about later in this episode, made zero sense. Because sometimes
it was a solid effort at a segue.
It was. I tried. I really did.
You did. There was definitely an effort made.
Okay. But golf, usually, I would say approximately like 90-92% of the time, is not a team sport. And, you know, Keegan Bradley this week is probably pretty happy he doesn't have to share his earnings with the team as he gets it done at the Travelers with a final round 68 in a very, very low scoring tournament in general. When you look at the winning scores, you have Keegan Bradley 23 under and then T2 is 20 under. Before we even talk about Keegan Bradley's performance, how do you feel about these, you know, 20 under, 19 under scores? I know we've talked about this before, but like, is this just a case of some courses just that you can't make them hard enough for these guys to not score?
I think that's a good chunk of it. The issue for me isn't the fact that Keegan Bradley shot 23 under. The issue for me is that Keegan Bradley shot 23 under and he only shot -2 on Sunday.
Yeah.
So that means he shot an average of -7 Thursday through Saturday, which is just ridiculous. Yeah. Like, I think anything above or anything better than like 4 or 5 under per day is a ridiculous number. Like you said, there's only so much you can do at some places. And the guys behind him in second, was it Zach Blair?
Zach and, Blair.
Brian Harmon, whoever Zach Blair is. They both averaged 5 shots under, which, like, for me, maybe a little bit too much. I do like to see a little bit more struggle than that from these guys. But 23 under and shooting -2 on Sunday is insane.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, you look at his 4S, 62, 63, 64, 68. When your worst score in a weekend is a 68, that is absolutely ridiculous. Funny enough, Zach Blair is actually I've heard about him before because of this absolutely gorgeous golf course he's in the middle of building and like planning on finishing hopefully soon. It's called the Buck Club. If you guys haven't looked this up, go ahead and look up the Buck Club on Twitter and Instagram. It's this plot of land. I think it's in Carolina. But he just up and bought this plot of land and decided I'm just gonna build a golf course. And he's a PGA Tour professional, you know? So here's what his vision says. The Buck Club started with the idea of building a world-class golf course. Along the way, it has transformed into a community of golfers all around the world who truly love the game and all it has to offer. While building a course, it is still our main goal. We are all focused on providing memorable experiences while growing the game and having fun. So definitely interesting to see somebody who's in the middle of their PGA career build a golf course. Also interesting to see somebody like Zach Blair just fire off a 20 under at a TPC course. That moved him from 144th to 90 in the FedEx Cup points. He's now knocking, if he can just put a couple of good scores together, he's knocking on FedEx Cup playoffs, which is huge for guys like this. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you like to see. But what's really interesting to me is, like, especially when you get into this part of the season and you see names like Zach Blair in front of Scottie Scheffler and Patrick Cantlay, who both are in T4, that's crazy to do that on a stage at a TPC course where the world's elite are there, they're playing, you know, and you still beat them out for a T2, a huge payday, and 54 spots moved in the FedEx Cup. That's the kind of stuff you love to see at this point of the year, because that kind of still brings this aura of anybody can win. It's not just week in, week out. You see Scottie Scheffler just popping off W's, which is probably going to happen anyways. But, you know, you get to see this kind of stuff where the guys that are kind of battling just to get in to the FedEx Cup playoffs make a great stand. However, Keegan Bradley does not have that problem, as he was in 15 starting the week and is now in 5th. He has pretty much solidified himself as one of the top 10 golfers on tour as of right now. So when you look at what Keegan Bradley has been able to do recently, this is his second win of the year, and he has solid scores, but he also has these very long gaps of kind of shitty golf. Okay. So this year so far, he won the Zozo, which was, it's not the first tournament of the year, but it's one of the first. It's like right at the beginning. It's like the Sanderson Farms and the Zozo, like the second tournament of the year. So that was his last win. Since then, he's had 5 top 25s. And then this win. He's coming off of a stretch of T48, T35, T29, T30, cut, win. So when it comes to a guy like this, who is clearly incredibly streaky and not in a good direction, do you think a win like this is something to build on, or do you think this was a flash in the pan?
Based on what we've seen, I think it's a flash in the pan. Yeah. I got to be honest, I zoned out for a good amount of the stuff that you just spoke about because I was looking at the Buck Club, the course layout.
Yeah.
Have you looked at this thing?
Uh-huh.
I don't mean to get too sidetracked, but there is a hole 6.5, a hole 9B, a hole 18B, and a 19th hole.
Yes.
And the 6.5, 9B, and 18B are all playing as alternate options, which is crazy. And then he did exactly what we have been asking for forever and made the 19th hole 120-yard par 3, which is described on the website as just in case your match didn't wrap up after the 18th, and the 19th hole is here to settle bets and to provide one last gasp of fun and intrigue. That's amazing. And right. I want to go.
Right? Is this, I mean, not only do... Like, it's such a weird little thing that he's put together here with a whole 6.5, 9B, 18B, and 19.
He's a man of the people.
It's weird. It's awesome at the same time. And hole 19 is also one more grasp at a possible hole-in-one right outside the clubhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, you've hit a hole-in-one. Could you imagine hitting that shot right outside the clubhouse?
That's the best caveat hole in one of all time,
maybe ever. Maybe
you have a hole in one, yes, but
on the 19th
hole, and they're like, you hit a hole in one in the bar, yeah, okay, and you're like, no,
this is an actual 19th hole. Yeah, I mean,
great conversation starter,
dude. The buck club is cool. I'm still trying to figure out where it's gonna be. I'm pretty sure it's Carolina. I'm trying to find the location because I see course plans and it gives you an entire layout with holes and stuff, but it doesn't tell you a address. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I didn't mean to get like super sidetracked there.
No, that's fine.
But yeah, no, I think it's based on what we've seen. I think it's definitely just a flash because we don't see enough consistency out of Keegan. That's the problem.
Right. And it's like, it's not his fault by any means, because throughout his career, at least since last year, he's you know, been in the top 30. It's just when you go through these stretches of really poor golf in the thick of the season, it's hard to consider you one of the top guys. And I've been hearing rumblings about like him being a name that you could consider on the Ryder Cup team, but I can like off the top of my head think of three other guys that would way, way easier make sense to me for a Ryder Cup team than Keegan Bradley.
He's a great first alternate for the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, he'd be a fantastic first alternate if like a guy gets sick or just can't make it or gets hurt. Mm-hmm. Like that's the kind of guy you want. Do you want a guy like that on the team voted on? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. You really. But now he's 18th in the world. He's up to 5th in the FedEx Cups. He's clearly getting his points somehow, somewhere. It just, he goes to these stretches of just not really putting it together. And we'll see how that kind of transpires as the season goes along. But hey, one hell of a win, obviously 62, 63, 64, 68 on a weekend. Never shooting worse than a 68 is probably going to win you some golf tournaments.
Yeah, it should. Yeah.
You know, then again, you could be Rory McIlroy and have the best score at a major to not win.
Yes.
You know, so that's also,
there's also the chance of that.
There's always some pain around there somewhere, but we got to talk about some of these other guys that played in this tournament, specifically two guys we talked about, I think the last 2 weeks, but just something to touch on here. As Ricky Fowler continues to impress, he did not take his foot off the gas pedal here at the Travelers, getting a T13. Also, Justin Thomas, who we talked about last week, getting a bounce back at T8. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think is more surprising so far this year, if we're going to just kind of focus in on these two storylines? Are you more surprised at JT's stumbling or Ricky's resurgence from what seems like nowhere?
I mean, I think it's, I don't even think it's an argument that it's Ricky. JT is a great golfer. He still is a great golfer. I don't think there's anyone doubting that. People have off years. People have off weeks, off years, everything. And I think he's just having one of those. I think he has kind of a mental block from his challenges at majors recently. And right, like, we expect this sometimes from people. Like, the conversation of, are we surprised of JT's struggles, I think is comparable to, are we surprised about Colin Morikawa's struggles?
Mm-hmm.
Not really, because that pressure gets to you, whether you tell people, whether you are vocal about it or not, it gets to you. And I think it's just getting to him a little bit right now. And he just kind of needs to fly under the radar for the year, just collect his thoughts mentally, get back in the game. And then, like, next year, we'll see kind of a hard resurgence from him. I'm shocked by Ricky because he definitely came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that, especially when it comes to Ricky, a year ago today, he was ranked 127th in the world. As we sit today, a year later, he is now 10th. Now, obviously, like we've talked about, the official world golf rankings being a wild assumption of a golfer's current stance, but according to his last 10 performances, which have been incredible, other than that one cut of the PGA Championship, he's the 10th best golfer in the world. He is absolutely on fire. And is it the Odyssey versus Jailbird? Could be. You know, the man's rolling putts from ridiculous areas of the golf course. To me, I think finally in his career, he has been able to take a step back and be like, okay, I'm not the prodigy of the PGA anymore. I'm not the wunderkind who's going to take over the PGA Tour and compete with the likes of Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy. I'm just a dude. I'm just a golfer now. I'm just a PGA Tour pro. Mm-hmm. I can remove myself from that situation, and now I can just focus on the golf that I know I can play. And it's working. Mm-hmm. You know, he's gotten away from the orange a little bit. He's not, you know, he's no longer like long haired California boy with, you know, his surfboard and all that jazz. He's a guy who puts his head down, works it a week in and week out, gets results, and is now reaping the benefits as he currently, I believe, where does he sit in the FedEx Cup? 17th, sitting in 17th place in the FedEx Cup, solely in a position to make a good run during the FedEx Cup playoffs, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he missed last year.
Yes.
So this is a huge turnaround for his career, but also to touch on Justin Thomas's struggles. I feel like I agree with you. It's like something clicked in his brain after, especially the US Open, where he had gone back-to-back cuts at the Memorial in the U.S. Open. He got cut at the Masters. He got T60 at the Players. I think finally something broke in his brain where he's like, fine. But I mean, it doesn't get much worse than this. Mm-hmm. And I, when you watched him at the Travelers, it really looked like he was playing carefree golf, which I think a lot of the times, not just for professionals, but also for us amateurs, is usually when we wind up playing our best golf.
Oh yeah, for sure. When you have the least expectations is like, and I think this is something that everybody can relate to when the beginning of the season comes around. No matter what your handicap is, you always, I feel like, expect to shoot worse your first round of the year than you do.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, when I go out my first round of the year, I'm like, okay, if I break 100, this is a great day. Like I'm not expecting to do that because I haven't swung a golf club. Because I can't do that without spending a ridiculous amount of money in Pennsylvania over the winter break.
Yep.
So when I first go out, my expectations are just to hit a few good shots. Honestly, I haven't kept score my first round the past few years because at that point I'm just worried about getting some swings in. But even with lowering the expectations to the point where I don't even keep score, I feel like I play so much better.
Yeah. Because you'll, especially when you're not keeping score, you're really only like keeping track of like the good shots you have or the good holes you have.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like sometimes when you do that, you can walk away with like 3-4 pars, maybe a birdie on the day. And you're like, huh, I feel really good about that. Now, sure, were some snowmen sprinkled in there, but probably. But you don't remember those ones because you weren't writing it down. You weren't thinking about it all day. You know, you were just thinking about the good shots you hit. And I think there comes a point where both, specifically for the Travelers here, but both Ricky and Justin, as much as they're on different trending angles to their season so far, both of them played kind of carefree golf at the Travelers, and they both looked really good. The only thing that is killing me with JT is the man cannot putt. Somebody put a jailbird in this man's hands immediately, because it's horrendous. Watching him putt is brutal to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, the tour average most times is just under a 2-putt. He's currently averaging, like 2.7, 2.8 putts on average.
That's not
which
good.
Means he's going towards 3-putting almost every time on average, which is brutal. That's
which
brutal.
Is something that even us amateur golfers actively try to avoid.
Yeah.
Like when you go out for a round, one of the main things you look at is how many 3-putts did I have? Because if you can keep it under 2, you had a good day.
Yeah, especially because that can turn you from a 95 to a 105 really fast with the amount of putts that you just waste on the green. So, I mean, that's something that's got to turn around. I mean, let's not forget maybe his largest missed putt of his career after the Jordan Spieth absolute rocket ship from the side of a cliff at the Ryder Cup to 3 feet, which Justin then subsequently missed the putt. You know, like that's where my brain goes when I think of Jordan or Justin Thomas putting. And I feel like I'm having an aneurysm, because that's just, man, like there are some times where you watch him and you go, even myself, a horrendous putter, probably could have done better on that one.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what's going on, but he really has got to get that figured out if he's going to continue to be one of the top players in the world. To keep moving forward here. I mean, well, hey, we were just talking about it, right? The Ryder Cup. So moving on from the Travelers here, kind of there's some rumblings now, right? It's in October. It's right around the corner. We got a couple months. What does the Ryder Cup team currently look like? Well, let's see here. We have the top six currently that has done it via their qualifying positions, and then the other four who would get voted in by the captain. Right now, the six that are in, and this is also assuming that LIV players are playing, by the way, it is Scottie Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Xander Schauffele, Max Homa, Patrick Cantlay, and Brooks Koepka. Those are your top six right now. That's a solid top six. The one that really surprises me, and I had to go on Data Golf because I was like, yeah, sure, he's had a good stretch, but like, we're talking Ryder Cup here, was Wyndham Clark. And math checks out. The math, he's having a hell of a year. 2 wins at the Wells Fargo and the U.S. Open. We already talked about that. He's been snapping off top 10s recently. He's got a couple top 25s recently. Had a little bit of a slow start to the season, but has really picked it up recently. And yeah, the only thing is, the numbers do work out, but when I look at that list of players, there's a certain one of these things doesn't belong here.
Definitely.
Aura to those tops.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you go into the Ryder Cup with this being your top six, we're not even talking about the other four yet. How comfortable are you in this situation? Because let's not forget their top six, the international side, or I guess their top three. They do a top three and then they vote in the others. So their top three right now are John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, and Victor Hovland.
I mean, those are pretty good top three.
Those are
pretty, I feel comfortable for the most part. Wyndham Clark makes me a little nervous, but
If he's besides got that putter, him,
I mean, yeah, I mean, besides him, though, for the most part, I feel fairly comfortable in the U.S. team for sure.
And I mean, there's always kind of a disparity when it comes down to it. Obviously, when it comes to the Ryder Cup, anything can happen. We do know that. You know, the worst team can win. Especially when it comes to team events, that's why they're cool. But there's definitely a disparity when you look at the bottom part of the international team or the European team and the bottom part of the U.S. team, right? So yeah. Here's the other four guys that would get voted on, but these are the most likely via points right now. Jordan Spieth, Cameron Young, Sam Burns, Colin Morikawa. That sounds good to me.
Yeah, I mean, Colin is right. Iffy for me right now because, like, he got cut this week, didn't he? Or was that last week?
I thought that was last week. I'm not even quite sure he played this week, did he? No, he actually had a good week this week, didn't he? No, he got cut. Oh, it was T14 at the U.S. Open cut this week. I got him mixed up. Yeah, he did get cut this week.
Yeah. But John Rahm also got cut this week, and so did Max Homa. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's – I would feel comfortable with a majority of the people going out for the Ryder Cup. Colin played really well last time in the President's Cup, so I definitely am okay with that. And he's still a really good golfer. He's just having some off time right now.
Right. He's just having a kind of an off season at this point, which, you know, can be expected throughout any golfer's career other than Tiger Woods. But you look at the bottom of the European side, though, and you got Shane Lowry, Sepp Straka, Seamus Power, and Justin Rose. Look, I love Seamus, I love Shane, I love my two Irishmen, right? I'll take any of the four out of the bottom of the U.S. team over that bottom four any day. Now, Justin Rose has gained a little bit of respect for me because of the win he just recently got. But
that's
just the disparity between the two sides. Obviously, we know when it comes to the European team, there's going to be that kind of gap between guys. But it feels like there's always at the bottom, the U.S. has the edge, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is great. The depth is there for sure.
They just have better depth all around. So with those teams as right now, so the European team would be John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland, Tyrrell Hatton, Matt Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood, Shane Lowry, Justin Rose, Sepp Straka, Seamus Power, and the U.S. team being Scottie Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Brooks Koepka, Xander Schauffele, Max Homa, Patrick Cantlay, Jordan Spieth, Cameron Young, Sam Burns, Colin Morikawa. I'm definitely leaning another massacre.
I don't know that I'm leaning massacre. I think I definitely am leaning U.S. victory, but I don't know that massacre is the word that I would use, because reading the list of those names off, the only one that I don't have much confidence in is Sepp Straka from the European team to put up a fight. You know what I mean? Like, I think all the other guys there on a good day could put up a fight against any of the U.S. guys.
Right.
So I don't know that massacre is the word I would use. I definitely still give the edge to the U.S., but.
Yeah. Oh, man. What was it called when they beat him at Whistling Straits? What'd they call it? Oh, it was hilarious.
Boston Tea Party 2.0.
Oh, no. The Slaughter by the Water. Good. That's so good. I mean, the Ryder Cup last in 2021, the United States winning that 19-9, that's
a massacre.
That is a massacre, right? But now it's on the European soil. So I wanted to ask you, how much emphasis do you put on home field advantage when it comes to the Ryder Cup, right? Because you have to remember this Ryder Cup at the Whistling Straits, that it was all U.S. fans, right? The first tee box was just all red, white, and blue. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Yeah.
It's the same way on the European side. If you've ever seen videos of former Ryder Cups in Europe, it's the same way. It's all blue and yellow. You know, the people live and die by the European team. How much emphasis do you put on home field advantage when it comes to the Ryder Cup?
I put a lot. Actually, most sports, like especially just regular US sports, I don't put as much on some of them. Like there's places where home field is huge, like Green Bay and like places like that where there's history and there's always going to be a massive amount of fans there and stuff like that.
Right.
When it comes to the Ryder Cup, I think home field is probably the most important thing because it's so expensive to travel from here to Europe and vice versa. Like I'm looking at flights right now, just out of curiosity, since we're talking
just
about it.
Just to be curious. Yeah.
Just cause we're talking about it. Like if we're, I don't know where the Ryder Cup is this year. Do you know?
This year's Ryder Cup. Let me look. I believe it is in Rome, Italy.
Rome, Italy. Currently, the flights to Rome are almost $2,000.
Woo!
And that might be one way. I'm not sure. No, that's round trip.
Goodness gracious!
Yeah, I got a $2,300 flight being the cheapest.
Man, that's
at least nonstop. So if you want a nonstop flight, $2,300. So I put a lot into it based off of that alone, because there are not like even people who are huge into the Ryder Cup are not paying $2,300 to go watch a golf tournament in Europe.
Yeah.
Because you still got to get tickets on top of that.
Yeah. And like if you're going to do all that traveling, you're probably going to want to be there for every day, you know? So you got to pay a ticket for every day. And that just on its own is already exhausting. Now, yeah. As far as the last four Ryder Cups, actually, the home side has won the tournament. So back in 2014, Europe won in Scotland. In 2016, we remember, you know, Minnesota, Hazeltine, the showdown between Patrick Reed and Rory McIlroy. U.S. Yep. came out on top there. 2018, the Europeans win in France. And then we know what happened in 2021. Ew, yeah, it was a slaughter by the water. We were all there for that. So far, it has been the home side wins, but the last team to win on the other team's soil was the European side. So now you got yourself a fired up American squad who's pretty much stacked all the way around. Going into Italy to tear down the Europeans. Here's the thing, and I think the last time the Ryder Cup happened, I was far more confident in the United States winning because that team was
stacked.
That team was ridiculous, man.
That was like the Warriors when they were going on their little tear that they had when Steph Curry was just hitting everything from everywhere. That's what that was. It was a super team.
Yeah, I mean, just when you look at that team up and down, especially with how those guys were playing at the time, like it felt like all of them were on their game, at the top of their game, on absolute fire.
Yeah.
It wasn't even close. You know, you had Tom Morikawa, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, who at the time was playing out of his mind, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, Patrick Cantlay, Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, Jordan Spieth, Harris English. You know, like, it really felt like all these guys were just playing the best golf that they possibly could be playing at the time. Yeah. And Scottie Scheffler was on that team before he was Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah.
Right?
before we got the Scottie that we have now.
Yeah. And so you add that little factor and you have a lot of those guys returning. It's a good team, but I'm also a little bit worried because I also carry a lot of weight into the home field advantage, as it were. So I'm a little bit worried as well that this European side's pretty damn good and they have the home field, you know?
Yeah.
So definitely something to, you know, keep in mind the longer we look at these lists moving forward. But I digress. We still have till October. So there's probably going to be a change in a lot of these, to be honest. So we'll see what the teams look like more, the more close we get to the October date for the Ryder Cup. Hey guys, we're just going to take an aside here to hear from our partners. First up is ShankItGolf.com. Go ahead and visit their website. They got all sorts of things for you. They got golf towels, golf polos, stuff to mark your balls. They got all sorts of hats. They have everything that you're going to need to look your best on the golf course and feel your best on the golf course. Go ahead and at checkout, use code FTT15 for 15% off your order. You're not only helping yourself save money, but you're helping us get a little bit of that scratch on the side so we can bring you the best content that we can. Again, go ahead and check out ShankItGolf.com for all your golf apparel needs. If you haven't heard before, Dr. John Murray is now a Titleist performance expert. That's right, he is someone who can help improve your body's swing connection. His medical background plus his Titleist certification can help you improve your golf game however you want. You want to have less pain? Dr. Murray can help. You want to create longevity in your career? He can help. Sick of getting out driven by your buddies? He can do that too. Check out Dr. John Murray at jmurraytpi on Instagram or reach out to him via email at jmurraytpi@gmail.com. Once again, that's jmurraytpi and jmurraytpi@gmail.com. I've already gone to him for my first screening. It went so well. I really felt like we identified some of the negative portions of my golf swing. I've already started doing my stretches to improve my golf game, and I'm interested to see how that translates into my second session. Go ahead and check him out on those platforms I listed already. He's great. He's great at what he does. All right, back to the episode. To keep moving forward. So as we know, the LACC, the Los Angeles Country Club, hosted U.S. Open, had a little bit of backlash and controversy from the players. We remember they were kind of complaining about the course layout, how it kind of felt like they were always hitting the same shots, et cetera, et cetera. However, it was the highest viewed U.S. Open since NBC took over the rights of the coverage back in 2020. Now, it was on the West Coast, so obviously the times are pretty much going to be later that they tee off because they're trying to make up for the, you know, the East Coast times and stuff like that. But according to eventual champion of the U.S. Open, Wyndham Clark, he said it was ridiculous that they were teeing off so late. And he actually blamed some late bogeys from himself and Ricky Fowler on the darkness. So, Rick, what is your first reaction to a comment like this, that they're blaming it getting dark for poor scoring at the end of, it looks like he was referencing round three?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has an effect on it. I don't think you can use it as an excuse, really, though. You play worse, I guess. I don't know. Like, the other guys that weren't playing as well got to play in the light. So maybe next time just save that in the tank for the end of your round on Saturday. And then, I don't know, there's not really a solution to that. Just maybe don't complain.
Yeah, there's not a solution to it, as well as there's not like you. There's pretty much been many, many tournaments that I'm sure Wyndham Clark has played professionally, that is, where it's gotten a little dark towards the end of the day. Now, I understand this is a U.S. Open, and you were in contention to win a U.S. Open, so it kind of makes things different. But you're not seeing these complaints from guys in the middle of the field, you know?
Yeah, and again, they finished up earlier, so it wasn't quite as dark. But I just don't understand. You won. Like, what's the problem?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we heard these comments from Ricky, understandable. You're upset you lost.
Yeah.
But Wyndham Clark, you won. Why are you complaining?
You won the tournament, man. Like,
move on. Like, don't worry about it.
Let's not reminisce on the bad, dude. You won the U.S. You're a major winner now.
Exactly. Okay? We can take it back from you. We could give it to Ricky if you want.
Well, we all kind of want Ricky to win anyways, to be honest with you. Wyndham, okay?
Like, why are you complaining? I just don't understand.
Yeah, it's one of those things you kind of read and you go, why? Why would I mean, we're already through the next week. Why are we talking about this still, dude? You won the U.S. Open. Let's not complain too much. Definitely some interesting comments. But do you think there's some validity to the whole, you know, they should tee off sooner to not have issues where they could run into darkness? The only problem is, like, how much earlier do you want people to tee off, man? Like,
well, my thing is, I think they should tee off earlier so that I'm not laying in bed at 10 o'clock thinking, Oh, I wonder how the tournament finished up. I never got an update. And seeing that they're still playing at 10 o'clock Eastern time, because they teed off at like 2:30. It was nice to have like some primetime golf to watch when it wasn't like the end of the tournament. But at the same time, there's no reason that we need a tournament to be ending at like 9:30, 10 o'clock our time.
Right. Yeah. It is. That is kind of, but also it's on the West Coast, you know, so that kind of changes a lot of stuff when it comes to West Coast tournaments. But usually at this point in the season, you're not seeing tournaments on the West Coast. It's pretty much usually the East Coast stretch.
Yeah. So correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last tee time was like 2:30. That's what, 11:30 over there?
Yeah, that'd be I think. Yeah, that'd be 11:30.
Okay. I mean, I get it, because like some of those guys were teeing off super early, but like,
right,
there's only so much you could do, you know?
No, and that's fair. It's one of those things where we got to talk about it because it's a champion complaining about the conditions of his championship, which just makes zero sense.
I mean, none at all.
Makes absolutely zero sense. So what are you going to do, though? I mean, it's one of those things where, especially if NBC is seeing the viewership numbers go up, don't expect to change anytime soon. In fact, expect the same thing to happen until viewership numbers go down.
Exactly. Okay? Yeah, they're not changing because Wyndham Clark is complaining about winning a major championship.
Yeah, just because this guy is complaining about how victorious he was in a major, we're gonna change things because it just feels right, you know?
Yeah.
All righty, moving into the back half, well, not half, but the back end of this episode here. Now that, you know, the story has kind of cooled off, just to revisit the PGA Live situation, Tom Watson, obviously a very famous golfer, he released a statement talking about the merger, and it was a, you know, a long one at that. For those of you that would like me to read you the entire thing, I'm not going to, because that would take up far too much time. You can go ahead on golf.com's Twitter account, where it is posted there, and feel free to read it on your own. However, I will be giving you some of what I would consider highlights. Here's the thing. When this is coming from a guy like Tom Watson, these kinds of comments, which are actually, what I love about them is how much they're very similar to all of our questions.
Mm.
You gotta look internally and realize that you fucked up.
Yeah.
I obviously, you know, I don't understand the legality of the situation. So is it something that could be reversed? I'm not sure. But here's some of what Tom Watson commented in this very long statement that he had. Quote, "What does acceptance of this partnership mean to the tour? What do we get? What do we give up? Why was this deal done in such secrecy? And why wasn't even one of the players who sits on the tour's policy board included?" Fantastic. That's a fantastic question. Point, Tom. That is a great fantastic question. Point.
Continue.
He continues, quote, "A matter this profound deserves thorough vetting by a representative group of stakeholders, which include those who in the end define the public image and emotional connection with the PGA Tour." First of all, I did not know Tom Watson was this well-spoken. I understood he was, you know, a very good golfer when he was still a professional, but like, damn, dude. Cutting him deep here with your words.
For sure. Rehearsed it.
Oh yeah. I mean, that was written, rewritten, probably sent to an editor. But all, you know,
editors.
Just in that statement alone, where he truly questions, why was this a secret? And why'd you keep it a secret from all the players that are a part of your policy board? They see, we can't forget the fact that these players who knew nothing about this are part of the board that's supposed to make these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, I don't, like, again, I don't understand the legality of this, but like, clearly, I feel like you can't do that, no, right?
It doesn't seem like you should be able to.
You definitely shouldn't be able to just go over the head of the board like that, you know, especially when it involves the players, their livelihood, their careers. It's a totally different thing. He continues to ask, what, if any, are the plans to reinstate tour players who defected and now want to return to the PGA Tour? Unfortunately, Tom, I feel like we know the answer to that one. They're just going to waltz right back in here after making millions and millions of dollars. He continues, have funds been so depleted to the point where the tour needs an unprecedented capital injection to remain solvent now or for the future? Damn.
Savage.
Damn.
Savage Tom Watson.
My man Tommy wrote down, are you that fucking broke, bro? Is it that bad for you? It's a great question, though. Like, you have to think. Obviously, I understand that on paper, the PGA Tour is technically a nonprofit. I get that. I know that. However, that to me just feels like a way to get tax breaks. You know, they're clearly a multi-billion dollar corporation. Yeah. Like, they make so much money from tickets to merchandise at events to people watching the pay-per-view events, all that stuff. They make so much money from that you still needed to circumvent capital from Saudi Arabia, just the government there, or I'm sorry, the PIF or whatever.
And switch to no longer being nonprofit.
Yeah. It's these are great questions from Tom Watson. And what's awesome is that it's coming from somebody who's obviously respected for not only his PGA career, but also what he's done for the PGA Tour post career. And him saying these words and writing them down in a statement and making that statement public pretty much means that they're going to have to respond to this, because the next questions, I'm sure, for Jay Monahan, who, by the way, barely ever does media, so don't expect him to do that anytime soon again.
Yeah.
They have to respond to this line of questioning. You know, it's coming from a place that is so respected in the community of golf, and especially amongst the old timers, as it were, that you have to at least have a statement. But I haven't seen one yet, so that's going to be an interesting thing to see if that ever comes from Jay Monahan or the PGA Tour. But here's this one last little thing on the tour's hypocrisy that I found quite good. He says, quote, these questions are compounded by the hypocrisy in disregarding the moral issue, a position which for a long time was publicly highlighted by tour leadership. While it is accepted that players on all levels would value the opportunity to make more money, it has also been illustrated that not all of our players are in search of money at all costs. Those who stay true to the tour for whatever personal reason or position of moral conscience are more than a few outliers. Basically, he said, hey, you were convincing these guys to stay for their, you know, their integrity, the what kind of legacy they would leave behind on tour.
Yeah.
And here you are inviting the same guys back and not guaranteeing the same money that those guys made for the ones that were loyal to the tour.
Yeah.
That's messed up.
It is messed up.
It just is. So knowing all this, seeing all this, hearing all this, has your opinion changed about where the future of golf is going? Do you think it's going to be the LIV Tour players are welcome back with open arms? Do you think there's going to be a team aspect still? What is your reaction to the future that is going to be this merger?
It's tough to say. I think we can expect changes, but I don't know how intense of changes we can expect. I think the LIV players will be welcomed back, maybe not necessarily with open arms, because I think if they are welcomed back just straight up with no consequences to leaving in the first place, there's going to be a lot of issues from the quote unquote, what was the words that you used? The more than a few.
Oh yeah. Yeah. More than a few outliers. Yeah.
The more than a few outliers that stayed loyal to the tour.
Mm-hmm.
Are going to have some things to say about that. So they do have to, if they're going to welcome back, figure something out. Mm-hmm. I think team aspect in golf is a great place to go. I do really like the aspect of that. And I think that's a good direction to go in. Unfortunately, the way that we're getting there is going to take a lot of heat. And that's just something they're going to have to deal with.
It has to take a lot of heat though. Like, especially for anybody that's got, you know, a moral compass outside of money, you got to question what's going on here, right?
But
unfortunately, these are just not decisions that fans get to have an input on or attempt to make outside of
players.
Or the players, for that matter, even the ones that are on the board. Who'd have thought, right? Who'd have thought? All righty. Well, we keep moving forward here. Just one more piece of news before we talk about the upcoming tournament this week. The match has returned. We have the Capital One, the match. This time it is between Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. There is going to be no PGA Tour Pro involved in this one. This one is happening on June 29th. So what is that? Thursday? Friday? Thursday. Thursday at 6:30 p.m. on TNT. It looks like this is going to be an annual thing, which is kind of cool. Because I like it. I like watching it. I think it's fun. How do you think about this one, though? It's basically two dynasties in football and basketball playing each other in golf. That's kind of cool.
I think it's a really cool idea for the next version of the match. And I have to say, this is by far the most poorly advertised match that we've had so far.
100%.
And it makes me a little upset because we get to see these golfers day in and day out all the time golfing. And now they just show up to this match and play with somebody else. I'm really excited to watch the way that these guys' chemistry on the court and on the field translates to their chemistry on the golf course as they're playing a scramble.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they picked some great personalities. I think Steph Curry is one of the best personalities, if not the best personality in sports right now.
Yes.
100%. Patrick Mahomes is super fun and energetic to watch. Travis Kelce is like top five for sure as far as best personalities right now in sports. 100%. And honestly, I don't know too much about Klay Thompson because I don't follow that much basketball. But from what I understand and know, he's a pretty cool guy too. So I think they have four really good guys. And seeing these guys outside of their sports in like videos and clips online and stuff like that, it seems like we can expect a lot of really fun and cool banter between them as the day goes on, which I'm also very excited for.
Yeah. What's always cool to me about these is like, these dudes are like full blown competitors too. Like you have to remember that part as well. Yeah. Like I know it's not a sport that they all play professionally, but they are going to take this seriously. One thing I also find kind of funny to kind of make note of is I think they're maybe going to have a little bit of a problem keeping Travis Kelce sober. I don't know if they're allowed to drink during this, but if there's one thing that I know about Travis Kelce is that man likes to put him back when he can in the off season. And I don't think this being a televised match is going to stop him. Okay. Cause we've seen his antics at the parades before. We know what happens when he starts, getting after it a little bit, which actually would make it way better. And I kind of want them to just let them drink. Cause I think that's 10 times funnier.
It would be awesome.
So do you think that any of the other three of them would do it? Because I think Steph's at a point where he's like, I'm keeping my body pristine to continue my career forever. And Klay Thompson's
so I can put the 3-point record out of reach from anyone ever.
Right. And Klay Thompson's like, I've already had ACL surgery. I can't put that in my body. And Patrick Mahomes being Kermit, he's like, I can't put that stuff in my body, man. it negatively affect my game this week.
I've never heard him referred to as Kermit. Is that a thing?
You've heard him talk. It's wild.
Is that something you came up with, or is that something that's been circulating the Twitterverse
before? For sure.
I haven't ever heard that. That's amazing.
And then you got Travis Kelce, who's like, I like to drink. I also play football part time. So I think they should let him drink because I think that'll be really funny. Looking ahead here, and I agree with you, by the way, way poorly advertised. Yeah. The fact that you just sent me this while we were recording and I haven't heard about it until now is a little bit appalling.
I know. I saw it at the gym the other day. I was like, I didn't even know this was happening because usually it's online somewhere. Also, yeah. I have a great idea for the next of the match. Speaking of drinking, depending on how Travis Kelce plays. And I don't know if Jason Kelce is any good at golf, but idea for the next match, have an open competition for two random hack golfers to go up against a drunk Travis and Jason Kelce.
Yeah, but then obviously the two hacks are gonna get drunk too, right? So there's just a hack fest all around. And we're gonna televise this in front of people?
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair. I'd watch it. I'd watch it.
I would watch the shit out of that.
Yeah, that would be That'd be really good. I don't know how good Jason Kelce is at golf. I did see recently they did they did their golf outing, the Eagles team did, and everybody says that apparently Jordan Mailata's the worst golfer on the team. Apparently the best golfer on the team is Chase Elliott, the kicker. Which that's not
that checks
entirely
out.
That that's checks not entirely out. That's surprising, right?
What do we think sense. He's doing during practice? He's
not practicing. Right. I mean, he's practicing because like they have the net there. He just brings his seven iron out.
And yeah, he just kicks like 10 kicks and then he's good to go.
He's like, oh, okay, the kicks are definitely working out today, so let's we'll do that. Yeah, that would be really funny to see the Kelce brothers up against some just Joe Schmoes and just them getting hammered and seeing what happens. I'm on board. All righty, to keep moving forward here, the last bit of the podcast, we have the 2023 Rocket Mortgage Classic this week. Yeah, that's right, folks. This is the big one, obviously. What's interesting, well, not totally interesting, because I shouldn't be surprised at this point, is Rob Bolton is yet again late on his post for the power rankings. I feel like, I don't know, I haven't read any other Rob Bolton articles. I'm like, do you do anything else other than the power rankings every week? Can we get this to the people a bit faster, Rob? Okay. Goodness gracious. But what we did find is fansided.com 6 hours ago put together their power rankings. I don't know if this is based off of just the Vegas odds, but if this is the Vegas odds, I am dumbfounded at this top five. Unless this is just a really poor, like, no, there's some names on here. I don't know who put this top five together, but we'll see. All right. Rick, random five, any order, you got to put them in the right place. You won last week. Let's see if we can't go back to back, huh? How about it? All right, you ready?
Yeah.
All right. Ricky Fowler, Tony Finau, Hideki Matsuyama, Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa.
Oof. Let's go 5-1. We'll go JT, Colin, Ricky, Hideki, and then whoever the last person was. So I forgot.
Tony Finau. You're not even remotely.
Not even a little
you
bit
didn't
close.
You even get one right. Just.
But did you like my confidence on that one?
I love the confidence, but here's what's going to be appalling to you and myself. This isn't written by Rob Bolton, by the way. Whoever this guy is, Ian McMillan. And he has Ian spelled I-A-I-N, which means he's clearly Irish.
Sounds European.
Justin Thomas is in first.
Okay.
I don't know why. And then Ricky Fowler in second. That makes sense. Colin Morikawa in third. Sure. Tony Finau in fourth. And Hideki Matsuyama in fifth.
It was just not even close.
I don't understand. We have little snippets here to kind of pick the brain of Ian, our guy here. I'm definitely interested to see what's going on. So this clearly isn't based on Vegas odds, because both Ricky and Colin have better odds to win the tournament, and Tony have better odds to win the tournament than Justin Thomas. So let's see. Number five, Hideki Matsuyama. He's been quietly in solid form, which is including a run where he finished T31 or where he has finished T31 or better with six top 20 finishes dating back to the Players in March. He continues that level of play. It could be a good time for him to pounce with a field made up of weaker competition. He's at plus 1800. I mean, we do know Hideki Matsuyama is obviously a very solid golfer. It's just, I feel like he's not having one of those years. Like the year he won the Masters, obviously he was having an incredible year. I just don't know if that's one of those years this year. Who is having a fantastic year and is in striking distance to get himself in very good position for the FedEx Cup is Tony Finau, number four here. It's hard to go against the defending champion, especially considering how dominant he was in his win here last season. With that being said, he hasn't finished in the top 20 since winning the Mexico Open in April. His putting has been atrocious and his approach play has faltered. I'm going to stay away from him as his current price, despite his strong course history. Ian, here's my thing, man. You said Tony's putting has been atrocious and his approach play has faltered. You know who else's putting has been pretty bad? the guy you put in first place. I just feel like, you know, what are we doing anymore, right? Like, what's
is this the Irish version of Rob Bolton?
I might just be the European Rob Bolton, and I didn't think it could get worse. You know, I thought, you know, it ended at Rob. It clearly doesn't. Clearly it doesn't. Number three, Colin Morikawa. Colin has the ability to separate himself from the pack with his ball striking, but missing the cut last week after losing over a stroke per round with his approach play is extremely concerning. He's probably the most talented golfer in the field, but I'd rather bet on him when he's in good form. That makes sense. I do like him in the three spot. He's one of those players where I feel like at any point this season, he's gonna pop off. I just don't know when it's gonna happen. And this could be a good chance. What was that?
Probably the FedEx Cup.
Yeah, probably. That would be a cool turnaround if he gets in there and just takes off. That'd be really fun. Number two in fantastic form, Ricky Fowler. Fowler continues to flirt with the top of the leaderboard. It's only a matter of time before he captures a win. The best time for him to do exactly that is when he plays in a non-designated event, which is exactly what the Rocket Mortgage Classic is. With a weaker field, it could be time for Fowler to pounce. That one I 100% agree with. I do think this is the perfect time for him to get that win. It's not a designated event, so it doesn't carry the weight of those, but it gets you a PGA Tour win again, and you're already on a really good pace, a really good tear of good golf. This would be a great time to get a win there.
For sure.
And number one, according to Ian, Justin Thomas. Here we go. I have been staying away from Justin Thomas in recent weeks, but a ninth place finish at last week's Travelers Championship may indicate that he's back in form. Amongst the top golfers in the field this week, he's the only one coming into the tournament off a top 10 finish. He still lost 0.31 strokes per round with his putting, but he gained 1.95 strokes per round with his approach. That was the best tournament with his approach play since the Waste Management Phoenix Open in 2022. That's a great sign this week. I feel like I can't put all my eggs in one basket seeing one solid performance out of JT as of recent. I don't think I can put my eggs in that basket. Yeah. I'd much rather see Ricky Fowler at number one here for sure.
I could get on board with that before JT at one, I think, right now.
Yeah, I just. And that feels like a lot to put on JT's plate there. I don't know if he can. If he has a good performance, then I'm like, okay, maybe he's figuring it out. I just don't see him dominating and getting a win like that. All righty, Rick. Well, unless you have any other golf news, that's going to do it for this episode.
Nope, that's it.
All righty, folks. As always, thank you so much for listening. Go ahead and follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter is FTT_pod. Instagram is @FromTheTips_pod. Follow us on both of those to watch all of our content that we put on there. We're usually pretty active on the stories on Instagram. We're starting to do a little bit more posting on Twitter. So, you know, stay tuned with us on there. We're always willing to answer DMs. If you guys have questions, we'll answer them on the podcast. And go ahead and just keep listening, folks. You guys are rocking it with the listens that we're getting right now. Have your friends listen. Listen twice. You guys are killing it, and we appreciate it so much. So thank you so much. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we out.
Thanks, guys. See you later.